Thank you for listening to the Shanghai Community Fellowship Podcast. To find out more about the SCF community, listen to sermons, and upcoming events, visit us at shanghaifellowship.org. Today, we're going to start a new series called Isaac, the Forgotten Patriarch. Isaac, the Forgotten Patriarch. So that really only makes sense if you know who Isaac is and you know what a patriarch is. Otherwise, who cares, right? Somebody named Isaac who's been overlooked. So big deal. So Isaac is, if this helps, is the son of Abraham. Maybe that doesn't help. I don't know. Isaac is the father of Jacob. No, probably doesn't help at all. So Isaac, along with his son Jacob, and along with his father Abraham, so these three men, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, are real people, by the way, lived thousands of years ago. And they are together as a group referred to as the patriarchs. And that's another way of saying father. They're the fathers of Judaism, the Jewish faith, but Abraham himself is a person who is recognized as a founder or patriarch or father to literally billions of people across the world today. For three of the world's major religions, all would claim Isaac's father, Abraham, as their founder. Islam, Judaism, and Christianity all would acknowledge and recognize Abraham as the founder and as a father or patriarch to their faith. And Abraham's son is Isaac. And it's Isaac we're going to look at today. We're going to take a little closer look at Isaac because, as you heard, Isaac is in the middle. And it seems like every time these three patriarchs get referred to, it's always in that order: Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Of course, that's the order of the way they come. Abraham's the father, of course, the son and the grandson. But you know how it is, maybe, to be the one in the middle, right? I'm guessing that there are people here today that you're the middle child. You're the one that got stuck in the middle. You're the one at home where, you know, you weren't the oldest child, where mom and dad were just, that favorite son, that favorite daughter, the oldest, right? Or you weren't the cute little baby that everybody went over and over on and always got their own way and got away with things that you could never get away with. No, you got stuck in the middle. And that's Isaac. He's just that guy in the middle, and not as much is written about him. There's more that is said about Abraham. There is more that is written about Isaac's son, Jacob. But Isaac is someone that we should consider and not forget. So in this series, we're going to take a look at Isaac, the forgotten patriarch, because his story is so important to us, and you're going to understand more as we go along here. Isaac is the son of Abraham, and it's Abraham who receives the promise of God. Now, I love the way that the guys from thebibleproject.com, they describe it this way. They say that the Bible is one unified story that leads us to Jesus. Thebibleproject.com. In fact, I would encourage you to look up their website. They're great. Boy, you're going to learn all kinds of great things about the Bible from thebibleproject.com people. But they say the Bible is one unified story that leads us to Jesus. And that unified story begins when you open up a Bible, chapter 1, verse 1, first page right there. That first reading is called Genesis, which literally means a book of beginnings because it is telling the story of the beginning. And when you look at the beginning, you find that everything is actually perfect. Everything, humanity, the nations, and there really weren't any nations, the family of mankind, the natural order, everything is in its perfect condition. Everything is, well, as God would say, was really, really good. But you don't get past chapter 3 when you see in this unified story what happens to what God has called really, really good. It becomes marred, it becomes twisted, it becomes broken. It's where death enters in, it's where destruction enters in, it's where brokenness and tears enter into the story. Everything that was intended to be perfect and good becomes somehow marred and misshaped and not as it was intended to be. And the rest of that unified story tells the story of how God is going to redeem and rescue and save what was so good at the very beginning. Now, I've talked a lot to people, of course, and I've experienced this because it's one of the things that people, well, they're bothered about Christianity. I've had people say to me, you know, what is it with you Christians? You always want to save people. You want to save me. And you know what? I don't want to be saved. You want to save me, and I don't want to be saved. You want to save the nations, and I don't think the nations need to be saved. You want to save the natural order, and I don't think the natural order needs to be saved. And it's one of the fundamental beliefs of Christianity that what we have today and who we are today and the condition of the nations and even the natural order is in need of a healing. That the nations, me, you, the people, every person on the planet who breathes a breath is in need of redemption, of a healing, is indeed of being in need of being saved and restored to the way God intended it to be. So that's the unified story of the Bible that's going to lead us to Jesus. And he begins that story by telling and describing how God is going to do this incredible thing of saving the natural order and redeeming all people. He's going to do that through one particular family. That's how he's going to do it. Maybe that's not the way you would do it. It's a big task, but this is how God is going to do it. He's going to work through one particular family. And so that story, at the beginning of that unified story, we see God speaking to one man, the father of Isaac, Abraham. Now, Abraham didn't ask to meet with God. He didn't want to be a part of a big plan to save the world. Abraham was just a guy just living in a city called Ur. But God comes to this man and reveals himself to Abraham. Abraham begins to know and believe that the God of all gods, the King of all kings, has just revealed himself to me. And then more than that, God begins to tell him all these kind of promises. I'm going to make your name great. I'm going to bless your family. Your descendants will become a nation. And through you and all of your descendants, the nation that will start with you, all the nations of the world will be blessed by one very special descendant of Abraham. And Abraham, when he hears this, and he knows and comes to understand that God is revealing himself to Abraham. Abraham believes God and he trusts God. And that believing in God and that trusting God for the things that are being spoken to him puts Abraham in right relationship with God. So that every person who would ever come after, including you and me, who would believe God and trust God in the way that Abraham believed God and trust God, would be put in right relationship with God himself. That's the passage we read at the beginning of the service, Romans chapter 4, verses 16 and 17. So it's a beautiful story filled with promises, a unified story that's going to lead us to Jesus. The descendants of Abraham would move on and grow into a nation, and out of that nation would come one person who would redeem the world and redeem all things, even you and I. But for that story to work, there has to be a descendant of Abraham. There has to be another generation. Abraham's an old man. He received the promises, and that's all good and fine. But if Abraham dies without a son, without an heir, how does the program work? How's the promise going to be carried forward if there's no descendant? So Abraham is a pretty old guy, about 100 years old, and his wife Sarah is 99 when they have their first child. How about that? 99 years old, giving birth to your first child. And that little boy's name is Isaac. And Isaac grows up, and he gets to be about 40 years old, and gasp, now gasp with me, he's not married. 40 years old and not married. Oh my. Now, no one's panicking, but Sarah has already died, and Abraham is just 40 years older than he was the day that Isaac was born, and Isaac doesn't have a wife, and there's no heir to come over and take the promise that God has made, and how is there going to be a descendant, and how is this unified story going to get completed if there's not a son to Isaac, and there's no wife, and there's no son, and they haven't panicked yet, but it's getting a little panicky. What's going to happen? So Abraham calls his most favored servant, his most favored servant, and he calls him to his side, and he says, I want to send you out to find a wife for Isaac. I am sending you out to find a wife for Isaac. And this is what he says, Genesis chapter 24. Abraham said to the senior servant in his household, the one in charge of all that he had, put your hand under my thigh. Sounds a little strange, but it was a way to kind of take an oath. I want you to swear to the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not get a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom we are living. But you will go to my country and my own relatives and get a wife for my son, Isaac. So he calls his servant, the old servant, the trusted servant. He makes him take a vow that he will find a wife for Isaac. And he says, by the way, do not find the wife here in the country that we're living. We're not from here. I don't want my son Isaac to be marrying somebody from this country where we live. I want you to go back to the country where I am from, and I want you to find a wife for Isaac from our home country. And he makes him take this vow and say that he will do it. And the servant agrees to it. And so off he goes. 10 camels loaded with riches and all kinds of gifts to give to this potential young woman who would marry Isaac and, of course, her family. He has to travel 640 kilometers to go from where Abraham is living to the area where Abraham is from, his home country. And that's a long, long journey. Now, these are the days before there's Google Maps. These are the days before the City Search app. He doesn't have an address. He doesn't have, he doesn't have an email. There's no little, like where I'm from. When you come into the town, there's a little sign that says, welcome to Mayfield, population 2,672. There's no sign that says, welcome to Abraham's home. There's nothing. He's just in a desert-like region that he thinks is somewhere close to where Abraham is from. And so as he gets into this region, he does what you and I would probably do. He goes to a place where people will gather, mostly young women. He goes to a well, because in the culture of the day, it was mostly women that would come to the well to draw water. So if you're looking for the wife or potential wife, the future wife of your master's son, where better to go than the well where ladies are coming out to draw the water? And so he's just kind of hanging by the well. He kind of thinks sort of he's near where Abraham is from, but he's not really certain. And so he prays a prayer. And this is the prayer that he prays. Lord God of my master Abraham, make me successful today and show kindness to my master Abraham. See, I am standing beside this spring, and the daughters of the townspeople are coming out to draw water. May it be that when I say to a young woman, please let down your jar that I may have a drink. She's carrying it on her head, so he says, please let down your jar to offer me a drink. And she says, drink, and I'll water your camels too. Let her be the one that you have chosen for your servant Isaac. By this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master. So he prays one of those kinds of prayers that sometimes we pray. Lord, I'll know this is you if this happens. God, I'll know I'm supposed to do this if this happens. I know I'm not supposed to do this. It's one of those prayers you pray that you're looking for some kind of sign, right, to happen. That's the kind of prayer that he's praying. God, I'm at this well. I'm looking for the wife of my son, or my master's son, Isaac. I don't know where to start. There's lots of young ladies here. If one of these young women says, and when I ask her, can I have a drink? And she says, yes, you can. And I'll water your camels too. I'll know that's the one. So you came to church today to realize this is how you find a husband. You just offer to water somebody's camels and boom, you're married. Just like that. I'm being silly. Of course not. Because listen what happens after this. So he goes to the well. He just picks out someone. There's many young women. He just asks one of them. First one, can I have something to drink? She says, yes, you can. I'll offer you a drink. And I'll offer to water your camels too. Oh my gosh, she said it, she did it. And so he's thinking, this is it. This is the answer to my prayer, right? This has got to be the one. And so the Bible says that he pauses and he begins to wonder. It says, without saying a word, the man watches closely, or at another version, it says he wonders as she waters the camels. Now, I don't own camels. I don't own a single camel. So I had to look this up. You know, it takes a long time for a camel to drink. It really does. I'm being serious. There are 10 camels, and to water a camel until its thirst has been quenched, all 10 camels, it will take pretty much the entire day. So when this young woman, who doesn't even know this stranger, the servant of Abraham, who she has no idea who he is, not only offers him a drink, but offers to water his camels, she is committing herself to take care of this man's camels for pretty much the entire day. And that's impressive to him. And as he watches her all day working to take care of his camels, he's wondering, I don't know, could this be the one? Now, he's already had his incredible prayer answered, right? Lord, I'll know God, I'll know it's her if she says, I'll water your camels. And that was pretty incredible, right? You and I might have thought, over, done, I got it, this is the one. But he's still wondering. I don't know. Wow, that was really incredible that prayer got answered. And she said that, may I water your camels. But he's spending the rest of the day wondering. I don't know. Maybe is this her? Maybe I should. Should I ask? Should I say something? What's the next step? But somewhere by the end of the day, by the time she's done, he approaches her. Something is happening and is wondering and is gazing and is thinking and meditating. I'm going to take the next step. And he asks her, what is your father's name? And would it be possible for my camels and I to come and spend the night at your father's house? Now, don't be put off by that very typical Middle Eastern hospitality. She can't really offer. She said, well, I'll go and I'll have to ask my father. By the way, my father's name is Bethuel. He said, Bethuel, yes. The servant of Abraham knows that this is a relative of Abraham. He recognizes the name of the girl's father. So now he's not only met a young woman who's willing to water the camels and he's been led to her, but he's been led to a family member of Abraham, exactly what Abraham asked him to do. Go to my people and find a wife for my son Isaac. And look at all this. I've traveled 640 kilometers. I've come upon a random well. I've asked a young woman, many young women, if I could get something to drink. She said yes. She said, I'll water your camels too. Incredible. And it turns out she's actually a family member of Abraham. This is the girl. This is the girl. She's got to marry Isaac. I've got to take her back. And so he bows down and he worships. It says, praise be to the Lord, he said, the God of my master Abraham, who has not abandoned his kindness and faithfulness to my master. As for me, the Lord has led me on the journey to the house of my master's relatives. He's so amazed. He just bursts out in spontaneous worship and prayer and praise. He says, thank God. I was so successful in this. I'm surprised myself. So he goes home with her, and there's a bit of a conversation because, you know, all he's done is given her a few gifts, and he's gone back to her father's house, but no arrangement has been made. And this servant, unnamed servant, tells the whole story to Rebekah's brother, Laban, and father and family about the whole story about, I prayed, I came from Abraham. You might remember him. He left years ago. He's a relative of yours. And the whole story. And I really think that your sister, Rebekah, is meant to be Isaac's wife. And they said, well, who can argue with that? That's a fantastic story. That's amazing. Yeah, you're gotta be. She's gotta be. This is wonderful, they said. But why don't you stay 10 days? Just stay 10 days. Because he wanted to leave right away. And you don't know about Laban right now, Rebecca's brother. You won't know about him till a couple of stories later. But Laban is not a very honest person. He's kind of a deceitful person. So you already kind of know this as you know the story and you know kind of the main characters. And so you know that if that unnamed servant stays for those 10 days, it's very likely those 10 days are going to be 10 years. That wouldn't be surprising at all. So he remains determined. He came on an assignment from God to find, and from Abraham to find a wife for Isaac. He found her. Her family agrees. And then they say, well, I don't know. If you're going to leave right now, let that be up to Rebekah whether she wants to go or not. So this whole story, This unified story about how God is leading us to Jesus, the son of Abraham, who is going to redeem the natural order and redeem and save us from our sins. That whole beautiful unified story, which gets passed on from Abram's descendants generation after generation, is going to get stopped right here in generation number one. The transition isn't going to happen unless Rebekah says yes. And the whole world and all the angels of heaven peer over to look and watch. What will she say? Rebekah, do you want to go with this man or not? And she says, I will go. And in her words, I will go. You're going to have to look it up. You'll just have to trust me right now. But this expression of the willingness to go and the willingness to follow becomes a theme that you will see throughout the first book of the Bible and throughout the entire unified story that leads to Jesus. A series of individuals who will say to God, yes, I will go. Yes, I will follow. Yes, I will trust you. And Rebekah is another person in the unified story that leads us to Jesus. When asked, will you go? Says, yes, I will go. Yes, I will go. And so they get on the camels, they ride back, they get back. He doesn't take her back to Abraham. He takes Rebekah to Isaac. They meet, they have a little boy named Jacob and a brother named Esau. And that's another story for another day. But the promise is fulfilled. And the promise is safeguarded. You know, these stories that we read in the Bible, they are told for a purpose. They're told for a reason, to teach us things so that we might learn about who God is and how God works in the world and how that unified story that leads us to Jesus, how you and I can be part of the same story, because there's always the invitation to come and join the story that God is telling in our generation. Now, this story that I just told you, you can read it in Genesis chapter 24, and you'll know right away that in that story, there are some major players in the bigger picture, the bigger story that God is telling. I mean, there's Abraham. He's in that story, and he's the father of Judaism and Christianity and Islam. He's a major player. There's Isaac, his son, the second patriarch who receives the promise. And then, of course, there's Rebekah, who could have stopped the whole thing by saying, no, I'm not going to go, but she says, I'll go. But the person that seems to get the biggest attention and seems to be the most critical in seeing heaven touch earth, to seeing the providential plans accomplished in his generation, is an unnamed servant. He's the one person in the story who doesn't have a name and yet becomes critical in seeing heaven touch earth. How is that possible? How is it that someone you've never heard of, someone whose name isn't even known today, can be a part of the story that God is telling that leads us to Jesus? I want to look at a few things that we can take with us today. Number one, he is a man, he is a person in a healthy relationship with spiritual authority. He is in a healthy relationship with spiritual authority. He is under Abraham, his master. He is in right relationship with Abraham. He is a servant who can be trusted. When Abraham turns to someone who he will send, someone who will go, someone he will use, he looks for a person who is in healthy relationship to spiritual authority. Number two, prayers from the airport. Prayers from the airport. You say, what do you mean by that? I don't know about you. I'm guessing a few of you have had this happen to you, because it's happened to me. I've been sent. I went on assignment. Maybe your work is sending you to a city you've never been to before on some kind of work assignment, right? Or maybe it's a personal trip. But you're going to a place you've never been to before, and you don't know anybody in that city. Someone is supposed to meet you at the airport, and they're going to be holding a sign with your name on it. And you get to the airport, and you go through baggage claim, and you come out where all the dudes are standing with signs with people's name on it, and you don't see the person with your name. You don't see your name. You don't see anybody you recognize. You don't see anybody. And you just stand there and you wait, and people start to go here and they leave here, and this one's found their friend and that one's found their person they're waiting for. And pretty soon everybody's gone and you're standing there and you don't know what's going on. You've left home, you've left your city, you've left your home airport, you've traveled all this way, you are now here and you don't know what's going on. The person who was supposed to meet you didn't show up and you don't know what to do next or even who to call. What I'm suggesting with prayers from the airport is this. When Abraham asked his servant, would you go? He didn't just walk down two tents from Abraham's tent to say, oh God, I pray that this young woman who's supposed to be Isaac's wife will walk by my tent tomorrow morning before noon. And that's my prayer. No, the servant goes and then he prays. There's a different kind of prayer that you pray after you've gone. There's a different kind of pray after you've followed. When you've already put it all on the line. When you've already left the comfort of home. There's a prayer that you pray when you're sitting in your living room with your bags right there and you're all nice and comfortable. Oh God, I just pray that this be a wonderful, wonderful journey and I'll have a really nice time. That's a different prayer when you've already left and you don't know where you are. You don't know what's going to happen next. And you're waiting for God to lead you in the next step. That's a different kind of prayer. Prayers from the airport. Number 3, wonder, wonder. I don't know, maybe if you'd have been there that day and if you had been that servant and when that young woman said to you, hey, and I'll water your camels too, you would have went, oh, cool, this is great. This is an answer to prayer. I don't need any more. But that man had to stand there all day and wonder. He had an answer to prayer. He had an answer to a specific prayer. He had an incredible answer. And he spent the rest of the day wondering, is this really God? Is this God here? I'm not really sure. I'm not sure what should I do with this. I'm not sure where to go with this. Should I take the next step or should I wait? Is this her? Is it not her? He's left to wonder and to seek God in the face of what it is to see a miracle and God answering prayer. Let me tell you something, a story from what happened in Jesus's life. There's a man named Peter. And Peter became one of Jesus's closest friends. But early on, Jesus comes to Peter, who is a fisherman, and they go out to do some fishing. Now, Peter and his friends are professional fishermen. They've been fishing all of their lives. They grew up as the children of fishermen. They get it. They've seen fishing. They got it. Nothing's going to shake them or seem odd to them. But that day when Jesus was with them, they had a supernatural catch of fish. You can read this in Luke chapter 5. And so you've got Peter, this seasoned fisherman, watching all this fish come into his boat, and he's seen great catches before. I mean, he's seen good days and he's seen bad days, but he's never seen anything like this. Peter knows that what's happening on the boat that day, that take, that catch of fish, is like anything he has ever seen before. This is a miracle that is happening in front of him. And he falls at the feet of Jesus, and what does he say? He doesn't say, wow, that was cool. Can you do that again? He doesn't say, wow, a miracle. I've never seen a catch like that. This is a supernatural thing. I want to follow you the rest of my life. No, what does he say? He falls at the feet of Jesus in the face of a miracle and says, go away. He says to Jesus, go away. I am too sinful to be with you. When we see the hand of God and we see a miracle, when we see the holiness of God, we are in the presence of God himself and he's multiplying the fish and answering our prayers, sometimes it scares the life out of us. And we don't know what to do. And we wonder, should I go? Should I follow? Should I ask? Should I trust? And that servant, having wondered all day about this young woman as she watered his camels, approached her and said, tell me your name. Tell me your father's name. And tell me if I can go home with you today. And then he offers his prayer, and this is the fourth thing, even me. There's an emphasis on the word me in his prayer. He says it about 2 or 3 times, me. You answered my prayer, and look at what you did for me. And he wasn't being selfish. He's just acknowledging that I'm such an insignificant person, they didn't even put my name in the story. But you saw fit, God of Abraham, to do something really incredible with me and through me. The insignificant doing something wonderful as he advances the kingdom of God. Number five, it's not over yet. He's not done. It's wonder. This is great. There's celebration. He's met Rebecca. Let's go home. The story's over. It's not over. It's not over until he meets the family. There's more to do. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be challenging. It will require courage. It will require discipline. But there's more to do before the story is over. Lastly, he completes the story, not by taking Rebecca back to Abraham, where the story started, but he takes Rebecca to Isaac, where she belongs. Here's a servant who's realizing that the story is coming to an end, and he knows how to complete it. It's God's story. It's something that God is doing, but here is a servant who knows how to complete the story and brings young Rebecca to Isaac, the master of the story, who will fulfill the promises of God. So Isaac is the one in this story who gets the promise, right? It's not the unnamed servant. Isaac is the one who's going to carry on the next thing. Isaac is the one who's going to be the descendant who leads to another descendant who tells of a unified story that leads us to Jesus. But God chooses to work in an unnamed servant's life to bring heaven to earth, to facilitate his providential will. God is using a person of insignificance without a name so that heaven will touch earth. And how does he do that? By receiving an assignment out of a healthy spiritual relationship, by prayerfully asking God to keep leading after you have already followed, by stopping to wonder and meditate on what God has done, especially in the face of a miracle or an answered prayer, by not counting ourselves out as too small or too insignificant, by showing courage and remaining obedient until the assignment is completed. You and I are part of a unified story that God is telling to lead the world to Jesus. And you and I will be the people that he will use in the places where heaven must touch earth so that we can facilitate the providence of God in our generation. Who's going to do that? Wow, some big name person, some famous person, somebody on the web, some pastor of some big mega church someplace. Maybe. Or maybe it's you. Maybe it's me.